It's Helping Hand weekly feature, HPR 1 stations every Friday afternoon, putting the spotlight on an organization or event in the community that offers assistance to the disabled and other folks in need. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are learning about the IHS, the Institute of Human Services, or is it Institute for Human Services?
Four.
We are learning about the IHS, Institute for Human Services, and it's a returning guest and always a real important one topically, as Honolulu and the state really now identified on a national and sort of international level as having a major homelessness crisis that needs to be addressed, and IHS on the front lines of that. Jerry Coffey, clinical director there, and he's also been someone who's not only part of Helping Hand previously, comes in, pitches on our pledge drives, really lends a hand to the radio station. So welcome back. It's great to have you on Helping Hand.
Hi, Dave. Thanks. It's good to be here.
And it's good to have you here. Before we get the 411 on the big new Sand Island facility, with so many homeless providers that make news in the islands as we face this issue, how would you describe IHS and what makes it unique or different, if there is such a thing?
Gosh, IHS is the oldest homelessness provider in the state of Hawaii, relative to the fact that we have emergency shelters. We're going on just over 35 years. So we've been around for a while, and we've learned over those last 35 years that different homeless people require and look for different kinds of solutions. And so I'd like to think that IHS is an organization that is constantly evolving to try to understand and be responding to those different needs that folks bring to our door.
Where are, in all, the services located, and is there, if there is a specialty or difference at each location pointed out?
Thanks. That's a great question. We have what we call service centers, because we really are more than an emergency shelter. We have so much happening at each of our shelters. But to answer your question, our women's and families shelter is on Ka'a'ahi Street, which is over near the Costco in Iwilei. And most people recognize IHS by the men's shelter, which is on Sumner Street, near the Kmart over in the Iwilei area. Adjacent to our women and family shelter, our third service center is the location for our housing and employment programs. And so many of the folks who reside with us in our emergency shelter and folks who don't stay at IHS are able to come and tap that housing program and also those employment training and employment readiness programs.
So of the places you mentioned, that's the one that has a day component?
Both of our emergency shelters are open all day. So guests at our shelters are able to stay in our shelters all throughout the day.
I guess I meant, that's a great point. I guess I meant people who aren't necessarily staying there, but are coming just for services and on a more outpatient basis. Is that?
That's a good, yes, exactly. So we have a primary care clinic at our men's shelter. And so folks that are not at the shelter, anybody who needs medical attention or care or a consult is welcome to come to the men's shelter for the clinic. But we also have housing specialists. We have veterans, representatives from the VA that come and meet with homeless vets. And additionally, housing programs and substance abuse treatment programs also in our men's shelter. And those are open to and available to people who do not reside at our shelter. But the location of our housing program and our employment training program is indeed at the Ka'ahi Service Center.
Right. And that's more the outpatient one that we were talking about.
That's correct.
Back to the men's shelter before we get into the Sand Island, because you bring up an interesting thought. So if somebody's just in crisis and on the street and they don't have a roof over their heads and they just, it occurs to them they want to break that cycle and talk to someone, can they just go into that facility and just say, I need help?
Absolutely. What they're going to do is they're going to walk in our front gate at the men's shelter. They're going to walk up to the front window and they're going to see a beautiful woman named Lisa or a young man named Tolo or perhaps Sene will be there. And they simply say, hey, I'm interested in chatting with one of your case management or clinical staff to talk about housing, to talk about what it would be like to come into your shelter. We serve 3 meals a day. We serve almost a total of 800 meals a day. So folks who are not living at the shelter obviously are always welcome to come and have a meal, do laundry, take a shower. So we have different times set aside each day for folks who just want to drop in, just like you just suggested.
And so, but if, and make sure I have it right, if I have it wrong, correct me. So any time of day or night, if someone is just is like, I want to talk to them. I need somebody to talk to. I've heard about IHS. I know they're good people. I'll go there if they just show up at 3 in the morning.
If they show up at 3 in the morning, many of our case management and clinical staff will not be there, but the operations staff is there 24/7. We do charge a fee to stay at the shelter, but we waive the fee for people who don't have the ability to pay that fee. We'll ask folks to volunteer in exchange. There really should be no barrier to people getting into any of our shelters. There are rumors that you need to have a picture ID. There are rumors that you need to pay the shelter fee. There are rumors that you need to have a reservation. We have no wait list at our women's and men's shelter, and we have very little barriers to getting into the shelter. You also have 3 days to get a TB test done. One of the big rules for residential settings is that folks have a TB clearance. And if you're a local person and you've not traveled to countries where there is a high risk of that, you have 3 days to secure your TB clearance. So there should be no barrier to folks getting into the shelter.
Is that something they need to go do on their own?
We can do that at the men's shelter. We have our clinic and we administer those TB tests right there.
So that's just good to know. So the answer is to my question is, in fact, day or night, 24/7, you're in crisis and you're on the street, you can just go to IHS and they will try to help you on the spot. And if you do not have money and are willing to just help out, you're in the door.
We are 24-hour, 365-day-a-year facility. And if there's any question or if anything seems sideways, my phone rings at all hours of the day and night, and so I'm always there to help problem solve difficult or unusual circumstances. We got people coming into the shelters from the emergency rooms, for example, 24 hours a day.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And it's a really, because it's a, such a, we'll talk about what's going on around the town. New Sand Island Center, who's it appropriate for? The services that are there, how many folks who are residents? Where can the community most assist with this one? Let's talk about this place.
Thanks. The Sand Island facility, as somewhat prescribed by the city and county, is called Hali Mauli Ola, which loosely translated means a place of renewal. We're calling Hali Mauli Ola Housing Navigation Service Center. I'll explain that in a little bit. But that was a contract that was awarded to us back in October, officially. We opened the second week of November. That facility is designed to, at full capacity, house between 80 and 90 folks. What that will be, as most people know by now, are containers. The city and county contracted with a contractor to build those units. And when it's fully completed and they've all been dropped on the lot, we'll have 26 containers that will be divided up into some single units, some units for couples, and additionally some ADA units to accommodate folks with disabilities.
Okay, so singles, couples, some ADA units, and so that's who it's appropriate for.
That's correct. We're calling it a housing navigation center because one of the criteria that the city and county asked us to have as a condition of bringing folks into this facility is that they're very near or at the point of getting into housing. And the dilemma that we know by now for homeless folks is the availability of that housing. So many folks have been approved and vetted or what we're now calling navigated through the process of getting approved for different housing and housing subsidies. But there is just that lack of available, affordable housing. So Hali Mauli Ola is a transitional, not a transitional shelter. Transition implies a whole different thing, which could be a very long-term stay. This facility is designed for folks who are very near the point of getting into housing. And so for some folks, they may have a disability and they have an income that makes it possible for them to pay down and into their very often small portion of their housing subsidy. Folks could be employed and they just needed some place to stay while they're waiting for that market rent unit to become available. But truthfully, folks coming through Hali Mauli Ola could be appropriate for all kinds of housing. They may go from our facility into a foster home. They may go from our facility into a clean and sober house. They may take advantage of a Housing First subsidy or a Shelter Plus Care subsidy. There's just really lots of different directions that they could go. And the goal of our facility and the energies and efforts of our staff there will be to help screen them and point them in the right direction. Typically, folks will be referred through any number of outreach programs that would be working with homeless people. But we have case managers that are working with folks from various organizations with clients and or consumers that have all different types of housing needs. There is an application that we can make available to anybody that wants to apply someone for the program. And we have an initial interview and we talk story. If they aren't at the point where they're ready or have not been fully or totally navigated towards. So navigation, what does that mean? Typically, when someone is looking to rent or participate in a housing subsidy, what they need to have are copies of their picture IDs, some proof of income, some letters of verification of homelessness, and in some cases, in all cases, and in keeping with the coordinated effort going on right now across the island, they will need to have had an assessment, which is called the VI SPDAT.
So the navigation means you're actively pursuing all these things, and they're up and running. You've got them all set. So it's more like ready for your big trip with all of your documents.
And that's correct, because the purpose of the facility, as the city and county conceived it for IHS to run, was that it would not be an emergency shelter. An emergency shelter implies an environment where people might stay, for anywhere from 1 to 6 or 8 months, which can be the case at our emergency shelter. So we wanted to provide a place for people to be who had taken the steps and who were ready to become housed, but they just needed someplace to be during that interim period. And frankly, it also, I hope, for some folks will function as somewhat of an incentive to go ahead and take that first or second step towards becoming housing ready.
You guys are, from what you said, it doesn't sound like you're at capacity, are you? Do you have all your residents picked?
That's a great question. At the moment, we have just about 10 to 15 folks that are living there because we're waiting for the contractor to drop the rest of those units, those living units, to become available. And by the way, they're really, really nice. We provide bedding. Each unit looks like a small bedroom. There's a bed, there's a nightstand, there's a storage locker. The facility, I should also say, obviously includes bathrooms, showers. There is a large office where we'll be able to meet with folks and work with them to help them to meet their goals. There is a shuttle also that will be coming from the facility out into the community between 3 and 5 times a week. One of those stops will be to the bus depot on Middle Street, and we're also taking clients as far as Punch Bowl and Waikiki, just kind of depending on what their appointments are and kind of what their obligations are. But we want to make sure that they're not stranded out there, so we definitely have a shuttle, and we have a shuttle for that purpose that's just brand new.
They have, what about food and stuff out there?
We have one meal a day that is delivered to folks out there. There are fresh fruit and other breakfast items that are available on an ongoing basis for folks who are looking for breakfast. And additionally, we bring in dinner each night for folks who are there who would like to order their dinner. They put their order in and we bring it to them.
Wow. And shared bathrooms, is that what we just said?
Bathrooms are private, so all the bathrooms are set up for individual shower scenario, toilet scenario.
In each unit?
Each unit does not have a bathroom and a shower, but we have the shower. We have a whole cadre of showers and toilets that is part of the facility, but it's separate from
the
units.
I get it. They're all single-use use.
Correct.
Okay, but shared, but single-use.
That's correct.
That's the right way. And the other services that are available there, the laundry, did you mention those sorts of, and also, I thought I had read sort of outreach workers, like is there a medical, what other sorts of, and maybe case management, trying to get them out of there? Are there other sorts of entities who are going to participate and be there with their own sort of offices on site?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So we have others, been fortunate to secure other sources of funding that we're dovetailing very specifically with this facility. And some of those partnerships include volunteer legal services. So we'll have volunteer legal services on property, hopefully on a weekly basis, to consult with folks with all kinds of issues. For example, having their traffic
tickets.
No, shucks. What is that called? Your profile, I guess. So, in other words, there are some very minor legal entanglements that can prevent people from getting a job or prevent them from signing a lease. And so volunteer legal services will be there to help to
smooth over their legal profile.
Right. And in some cases, child custody, child support, giving folks a point in the right direction to maybe take a look at when it's appropriate to have their child support adjusted. Many people go on and on paying child support beyond a point at which that amount of child support is still necessary, and that becomes in and of itself a huge barrier to folks having access to the funds that they need to be able to pay rent. Other sources of support that will be coming there, we'll have housing specialists that will be there also. Housing specialists are people who basically are representing any number of housing subsidies, and they're experts understanding things like Hawaii public housing, Section 8, moving folks into foster homes.
Is that like AEH or whatever? Or is that a different EAH?
I don't know what that is.
EAH housing.
EAH housing.
I'll turn you on to them.
All right.
They're a company doing that. But continue.
Other resources that will be there for folks staying in the shelter the Humane Society is another partner with us in opening this facility. We knew that this needed to be, and we definitely wanted it to be a low barrier facility. So one of the things that we know about homeless folks is that they have pets, and emergency shelters and transitional shelters often don't allow pets that are not certified therapeutic or service animals, as they're called. So the Humane Society is providing free pet screenings for us in anticipation that folks would be wanting to come in with their dogs and cats, and in some cases birds. Humane Society does the free screening, including immunizations, helping to make sure those dogs don't have ticks and fleas, so that we know we're able to move healthy, happy pets into our facility along with those owners.
It's sounds, you know, every time talking to you, it's... it's inspiring. You always feel like you're not doing enough with your life when you're picking your brain.
Well, if you're having this conversation with me, you're on the right track, buddy.
Yeah. Well, no, it's really, it's humbling stuff. It always kind of puts me in my place, you know, when I, this is like, you know, it's like, man, you think you got issues that are going on. Not until you talk about this, and then they all kind of go away. We kind of mentioned it, and I thought we would touch on it. And it can be, you know, a way into how we can help IHS, certainly, and whatever you would like to take advantage of in terms of volunteer support, people who could be on your board, just cash, real estate for a new space, people who are plumbers who could take care, or any kind of tradesmen that you may need. But the story of the Kaka'ako thing, and I walk to and from work. It's about a mile and a quarter, a mile and a third, like 1.3 miles each way, and into Waikiki and back, and or out of Waikiki and back, rather. And wherever you go around town, it seems like there are little camps everywhere now. There's ever since the Kaka'ako thing happened and got dispersed, or has started the dispersal, whatever you want to call the process of that. Bushes just occupied by folks in random spots. It's very... You know, you'd be walking along, and sudden, you know, there's a person living in, you know, in the bush, and you're right there on the front line. Where are we?
Where are we relative to progress?
Yeah, I mean, are we just scattered the homeless to different places? Are people just checking out? I mean, you hear these stories, so many people are housed, but I see these little camps everywhere now, and I see these smaller encampments of just individuals, and it makes me think. No, it hasn't gone anywhere.
One of the things that we anticipated would happen back when the initial conversations were being had about enforcing sidewalk ordinances, Waikiki, for many reasons, had a particular stake in seeing that those ordinances could be enforced for all of the obvious reasons that Waikiki is our economic engine. And so we anticipated that what you were describing would happen. And you're right. It did happen. It did disperse folks out into other areas. We anticipated that homeless individuals who were accustomed to being in Waikiki and Kapalani Park would move Mauka. And so sure enough, we saw Stadium Park. We saw Wailai Avenue, Lower Wailai Avenue, little pockets in Kaimuki, certainly in Mo'ili'ili.
Right down the street from the station, there's the little thing going on.
One of the things that we did do in anticipation that would happen is we established a drop-in center at St. Mary's Church in Mo'ili'ili. It's every Thursday. It is a place for folks to go to have a meal, to talk story with. If you're a vet, there's always an individual from the Veterans Services branch there. We have housing specialists, substance abuse specialists, and the regular outreach staff and outreach team that we pulled together specifically to be responding to homeless folks in Mo'ili'ili, knowing that that would happen, available to start having conversations and chatting with folks about what are the first steps that they can take to get into housing. And maybe that's housing first. Maybe that's for folks who don't want to move into an emergency shelter, don't want to go to a Hale Mauleola in advance of getting their housing. We're just coming up on the tail end of our first year of housing first dollars. We had a housing first program, and we housed just about 130 people in the last 9 months. The majority of those people came directly from the street. Are we making progress? I think that I'm seeing a level of communication among service providers that I did not see 5 years ago. I think I'm seeing that we have kind of a universal a universal assessment tool that is now being used, the VI-SPADAT, so that folks can be housed according to need. I think in the old days, it was the Wild West, and a lot of homeless individuals who maybe did not have the greatest imperative relative to their vulnerability were getting housed ahead of people who really were more vulnerable, and I think that's happening less and less. But in terms of our Sand Island facility, you know, if we're smart, we'll watch and see what other communities have done. And what we're doing at Sand Island and the concept with Hale Mauleola is a concept that we've seen in Seattle, we've seen it in other places on the mainland, and it seems to be very successful, and it's a place where people want to be, it's a place where people can make changes and have a safe and a supportive environment that gives them a lot of freedom to make a transition in their life that is otherwise very hard for them to make.
What can people do to most support what you're doing? Where are the holes in your outreach?
This might sound a little silly, but because we're coming up on Christmas, what we know will happen is that we will be inundated with toys. And we are so grateful for all of those donations that we get around the holidays because there are homeless children. Our shelter always has them. We receive more than enough toys each year. What we really, really appreciate getting are underpants. We need underwear for men, women, and children. We need shoes that are in decent condition. We need saline solution. We need feminine hygiene products. We need bedding. We need towels. Our Hale Mauleola facility, we will not be allowing folks to bring bedding in with them. We want to get ahead of that bed bug issue and make sure that doesn't get a hold at that facility. So bedding, hotels are very generous. We get lots of bedding from hotels, but towels in particular. And again, I can't stress enough, undergarments. It's more than once in my career as a homeless provider, I've been at Kmart buying women's panties, and people do look you up and down. We'll always go by what our folks need, but gosh, it's great when people donate those things that are just very practical things that you and your family need every single day. We love the toys. The toys are very welcome. School supplies are always welcome. But just some of those day-to-day items that you go and buy for yourself and your family every single day.
We can have in our web post for this a list of those items.
That's correct.
Which will be very handy.
Be happy to make that available to you. But specific to Hale Mauleola, you know, we inherited, 5 acres. The facility that we've put out there that we're moving into now inhabits about 1 acre of those 5 acres. We've got a little bit of room out there, and we would love to have help with some raised bed garden scenarios. So we're reaching out to folks to help us with putting together those raised beds. There are still many little finishing touches that we need to have completed inside the living units. So people who are handy, for example, we have small photovoltaic units that we'll be installing on each of the containers that will correspond to a power source for each of the living units. We'll need help installing those. But really, landscaping, help supporting us with putting together some common areas for folks who live there to really congregate and enjoy the space. We want to make barbecue area. We want to make it a place where people want to spend time and can really relax and enjoy themselves and enjoy each other. So any group of volunteers that is handy with lumber or and planting and have some strong backs to help us for a weekend or two, we know that we want to have the ability to grow some of our own food and give folks that opportunity to be engaged with healthy activities like gardening and planting things.
Gardening, very... very therapeutic on a number of levels. At ihshawaii.org, folks can learn more about the Sand Island facility or other programs that we talked about and ways to get involved, help support their mission, and to get service if you know someone and you'd like to help them or you yourself need help. 808-447-2800, their phone number, info@ihs-hawaii.org. is their email at hawaiipublicradio.org. All the contact information's there waiting for you. Plus, we'll have the list of things they most need help with if you want to support their efforts. And you can find all the other Helping Hand segments waiting at hawaiipublicradio.org. He's a clinical director at IHS, Jerry Coffey, and always cool to have you here. Is there something that we didn't cover that's important? Let's make sure we add it. Anything going on? Any funding event? Anything else that's coming up?
Just in anticipation that there will be a lot of questions and curiosity about our Hale Mauleola or Sand Island facility. just if you're interested in linking somebody to that facility, we have an application that we'd be happy to send to you or to your staff if you're a program that has or an organization that has the occasion to work with homeless folks. That number that Dave just gave, the 447-2800, is a great number to call. And we also have an outreach team that we can dispatch out to interact with folks on the street. If you know of a homeless person, if you love a homeless person and you're concerned about them, our outreach team is just awesome about coordinating a face-to-face with family members and obviously directly with anybody that's on the street that would need some help getting into a facility.
Are there hours that that's available?
You can call 24 hours a day and leave a message if nobody picks up, but certainly Monday through Friday during working hours, our outreach team and outreach staff and the support staff for that outreach team are always available to answer questions and talk story on the phone.
It's fantastic. It's a real community resource, and I hope whenever there's ever stuff going on that you reach out to me, but I'll always be checking in with you anyway because I love having you on. Thanks for doing what you're doing, man. Appreciate
it. Happy to be here, Dave. Thank you for asking.